The following is an unrehearsed interview with Dr. James M. Boswell by Debbie Wilson for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview is conducted at the office of Dr. Boswell at Cumberland College in Williamsburg, Kentucky on July the 28th, 1978 at 4:45 p.m. The first thing I want to start with, Dr. Boswell, is just some personal background. Now, what is your full name?
James Malcolm Boswell.
And where were you born?
In Harrison County, near Sandiana, Kentucky.
And when was this?
January 26, 1906.
Who were your parents?
My parents were Joseph Boswell and Fanny Boswell.
Well now, where were you educated?
I attended grade school at Leesburg, a small village near which I was born. I attended high school in Sindiana, at Sindiana High School. And I spent 1 year on the farm before going to Georgetown College, where I was graduated. And then I taught there and took graduate work at the University of Kentucky, completed my master's degree and beyond. Then I came here in the fall of 1931, took further graduate work, however, after that, at the University of Kentucky and also at the University of Michigan.
Well, now, who is your wife?
My wife is Mary Susan Dudley Boswell.
Do you have any children?
Two.
Are they here in Williamsburg?
Oh, the children, one, my son, our son is an electrical engineer. In Louisville, with five children. My daughter is Mrs. Louise Boswell Tipton and lives in Lexington. She teaches part-time at the University of Kentucky.
Well, Dr. Boswell, the thing I want to talk to you about is the history of Cumberland College. I think you said you'd been here since 1931.
That's right.
Now, have you been president since 1931, or what did you start as?
No, I came to Cumberland to teach mathematics and science in both the high school and the college. The college was in a two-year college, and I taught mathematics and science in the high school and in the college. My first year here, and then at the beginning of the second year, I became athletic director of the college program, also of the high school program, such as it was, and did teaching in addition to coaching mainly the basketball team. And then I left. 1 year I spent in 1938-39 doing graduate work and teaching at the University of Kentucky. Then came back in the fall of 39, served until 1942 summer, when I went in the Navy as a lieutenant in the Naval Reserve Program, went on active duty, and later became a lieutenant commander, and was released in mid-October of 1945, and came back then to be acting president of Cumberland College, and later president. So I've been acting president and president since 1945.
Well, now, I'd like to ask you about the history of this college. Whose idea was it to start this college here?
Well, according to the records, a group of persons who were members of the First Baptist Church here in Williamsburg conceived the idea of opening an institute, it was called then. That was back in 1888 and 1889. It was not Cumberland College, but was Williamsburg Institute. And in the beginning of the institution, The college or the institution had three levels on which it served. There were a few graded schools in the area, and those that were here, public, were largely inaccessible. The high schools were also scarce in the area and were somewhat inaccessible. And of course, there were not many colleges in the area either. So the Institute, as it was called then, Williamsburg Institute, was founded to meet a great need on all three levels, the elementary level, the secondary level, and the college level. In fact, the college section of the Institute was originally chartered to give the bachelor's degree and the master's degree. As far as I know, no master's degrees were ever given by the institution, but some bachelor's degrees were given. And then when the subject of accreditation of colleges came to receive emphasis in the 1900 and around 1915-18-20, it was decided to relegate the college program to a two-year program, a junior college. And thus, from around 1918 until 1937 or 8, when the grade school was discontinued, the institution served on the elementary level, the secondary level, and the junior college level.
Now, in the beginning, was it just to serve students here in Whitley County?
Well, no, not necessarily. It was open to students from any place who wanted to come, but it was the college was originated to meet the need of this general area in which it is located.
Now, did you have boarding facilities?
Yes, boarding facilities for boys and girls, and even men and women. Some kids, even 9 and 10 years old, lived in the dormitories in the early days of the college.
Well, now, do you have any idea of what some of the courses were that were offered in the early days?
Well, on the elementary level, the main emphasis at that time was on reading and writing and arithmetic. And these were really stressed, and demands on the students on the elementary level were much greater than are the demands today. The high school program was something of a classical program in which mathematics and some science, some language, and some history all were required on the high school level. And of course, on the college level, these classical courses in language and in history and math and science were part of the curriculum. I might mention too that in the early days of the college and up till in the 1920s, there were some vocational courses offered, such as vocational courses which would qualify one to work in a railroad station with telegraphy, courses which involved woodwork, and perhaps some basic machinery courses. It was the program, and I believe these were offered more on the high school than the college level, but the program was vocational as well as classical.
Well, do you have any idea about the expense factor in the early school?
Oh, in the early, very early days, the cost in dollars was very, very small. For $150 a year, a person in the very early days of the college could cover with $150, he or she could cover room, board, and tuition. And up until after World War II, the cost of attending an academic year was just in excess of $200 for room, board, tuition, and fees.
Well, now, do you have any idea about how many students the college served in the early years?
I would say on all levels, the number attending the institute, and I referred to that, the number attending the institute probably ranged between 200 to 300. That includes people on the elementary level, the secondary level, and the college level.
And do you have any idea, was this primarily boys or girls? Or
I would say that from the old catalogs that have been preserved and other historical information, that they were about evenly divided between female and male students.
Well, now, you mentioned people from the First Baptist Church as being instrumental in starting the school. Was there anyone in particular, or any, maybe a, just a few people in
particular?
Well,
names of local people are still familiar to this area. The Gatliff family played a very important role in the founding of the institution, getting it going. The Siler family played a very important role. The Mahan family was significant. The members of the Mahan family were significant in the early history of the college. The Ellison family, another one, another family which is prominent in the early history of the institution.
Well, who supported the school, I mean, other than tuition?
Well, in the early history, I do not believe that Kentucky Baptist gave any support to it. I think the Mount Zion Association might have given some support, but certain ones who were designated to raise funds, and these people went far and wide throughout the eastern part of the United States in an effort to get funds to build buildings and pay the teachers and keep the program going.
Do you have any idea what was what they used to appeal to people to support this school?
Well, yes, they appealed to the people on the same basis as really as which we solicit funds now, the same bases, but better make that plural, on the grounds that the institution was serving mountain students, that there was a great need for this institution in this mountain area, and then also in raising money, the religious emphasis of the institution was stressed also. So money was mainly sought on the grounds that the school was serving young people from the mountains, many of whom were deprived. In fact, I guess most of the people in the mountains were deprived then. And on the basis of the college trying to give an education in a religious atmosphere.
Now, you mentioned it's the Mount Zion Association. Now, what is that?
The Mount Zion Association is one of several hundred associations. Perhaps not several hundred, not right. But one of several associations in the Kentucky Baptist Association. It's now called Kentucky Baptist Convention. But I can't think of very many of them, but right in this area, there's the Bell County Association, the Korea County Association, Wayne County Association, Concord Association, and the Lynn Camp Association, and so on. These are all Each of these associations is made up of groups of churches, and each association is a part of the Kentucky Baptist Convention. And the Kentucky Baptist Convention is a part of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Now, today, do you receive support from the Baptists?
Oh, yes. We at Cumberland receives strong, comparatively strong financial support from the Kentucky Baptist Convention. Cumberland, this past fiscal year, from July 1, 1977 through June 30, 1978, received from the Kentucky Baptist Convention over $500,000 to help operate the school. Cumberland receives more money from the Kentucky Baptist Convention now than any than either of the other two senior colleges in the Kentucky Baptist Convention, Campbellsville and Georgetown.
So Cumberland is now a four-year college, is it?
Cumberland originally, the Weisberg Institute was originally a four-year institute. Had reverted to the college level, reverted to the junior college, then and served as a junior college from about 1918 through 1961, when the first senior college class was graduated. Cumberland has been a senior college since 1961.
Well, now, just what can you tell me about the growth of Cumberland College? How it's expanded?
Well, Cumberland did not grow a great deal in enrollment from the time of its founding up through, I guess, the World War II. There was some fluctuation in enrollment. Coming from the fact that in 1937, the grade school was discontinued, although there were only about 30 kids, I guess, in grade school then. And in 1941, the high school was discontinued, although there were not over 15 or 20 students in the high school at that time. But the number of people taking college work was fairly constant, I believe, at least from around 1916 or 17 up to the beginning of World War II.
Do you have any idea about what this number was?
Oh, when I came here, I'll have to go by what I remember. When I came here to teach, in 1931, there were approximately 170 students in the junior college. About 45 students, maybe 50, in the high school, and about 30 to 40 students in the grade school. The college enrollment remained fairly steady, although at the beginning of World War II, the enrollment of the on the college level was just over 200.
Okay, now you were speaking about growth around World War II and the enrollment at World War II.
Yeah, about 230 at the beginning of World War II, which was in December of 1941, the attack on Pearl Harbor. And then, because of the demand for men in the services, the men's enrollment decreased sharply during World War II. And when I became acting president in October of 1945, I do not believe there were over three men enrolled in the college. There were about 95 women. Only three men.
Now, what's the present enrollment?
Last fall, we enrolled in the on-campus program. That includes dormitory students and commuting students who come to the campus every day or every other day and carry a minimum of 12 hours. There were about 1,665 or 70. Then we have an off-campus program in several centers such as Corbin, Oneida, Kentucky, and Oneida Institute. We have had one in Bell County. We have had one down in Campbell County, Tennessee. In the off-campus program last fall, we enrolled around 230 students. Most of these were part-time. So our total enrollment, just headcount last fall, fall of 77, was around 1,900.
Now, how do you account for this growth?
Well, there are several factors, I think, which have made for the growth of the college. We might keep in mind that the demand for higher education increased sharply after World War II. There was demand for mathematicians, for people who were skilled in engineering, demand for doctors, great demand for teachers, and jobs were readily available. From 1945 up to the last three or four years, are readily available in just about every field for people who had even 1 year of college, much less two, three, or four. And there was an increase in enrollment in all colleges. And Cumberland's growth certainly kept pace with the growth in enrollment in private colleges in Kentucky and generally throughout the nation.
Well, now, what courses do you offer now?
I couldn't think of all the majors, and I don't have them listed. But we offer around 18 majors. We offer, I'll mention a few of them. Mathematics, the ones in the area in which I specialize in my study, which will come most readily to mind, mathematics, strong major in math, we offer strong major in chemistry. We have only one person full-time in physics, but we have a strong program there, have a strong program in business, strong program in teacher education generally, and we have a pretty broad curriculum for a school of our size.
And what about your building program? This campus is larger than I expected.
Well, from 1928, at which time the gymnasium, which we now use, was completed. From 1928 until the late or early winter of 1955, a period of 27 years, no buildings had been put up on the campus, except, I believe, in addition to Johnson Hall, girls' dormitory, still a girls' dormitory, which was used for our home economics and which was built by money largely from the Gatlin family, if not altogether. We don't use that anymore. But this building, the building in which we are now, the Gatlin building, was the first of some 12, or I have to count them, 12 new building units that we put up beginning in the in 1955. That is, over a period of 23 years, we've averaged just a little over putting up one building in just a little over every 2 years. I hope we can keep that pace, because we still need to replace some of the old buildings, and our facilities are not quite adequate to meet the needs. I can't remember the dates at which all of our buildings were completed. I can remember a few. The Skaplith building, remind me to tell you a little about the history of this one. Skaplith building was first. The next building to be put up after that, as I recall, was the cafeteria named for T.J. Roberts. And the next building, I believe, after that was the library, the Norman Jean Hagen Perkins Library. Then we went to a unit for our men's dormitory. Then we put up the biology building, and then we went back and put up another men's dormitory, and the chemistry building followed that, and then the student center was erected, and then now going up is a music building, and we're now trying to raise money for a building in which to teach business. I've omitted the two dormitories, Archer Hall, named for Mrs. N.A. Archer, completed in 1966, and Asher Hall, another dormitory for women, completed in 1976, 10 years later.
Well, now, how many can you accommodate in your dorm?
We can accommodate with a little bit of crowding, perhaps 1,020 to 1,050.
What do you have? Is it two girls' dorms and two boys'
dorms? No, we have no. This fall, we have five girls' dormitories for women. We have the dormitory, as you look out the window, you can see it. That's a small one. We converted an apartment house that we bought into the dormitory, and then we'll be putting up the Asher Hall, which houses 156, and being that in 76, we didn't need this one, haven't needed it for 2 years. But we will need it this fall to house the overflow of women. So we have a sophomore dormitory, that one's called. We have Johnson Hall, the old dormitory. Roman Hall, which is also an old dormitory. And Archer Hall and Asher Hall for women. For men, we have what's known as Mahan Hall, an old, the older building, part of which was put up in 1905. And we have North Hall and West Hall, both of which are pretty modern structure.
Pardon me, I'm going to turn this tape over. Two of an interview with Dr. James M. Boswell. Now, Dr. Boswell, before I turn the tape over, you were speaking about the buildings here at the college. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about the buildings?
Well, we, as I mentioned, we are trying to raise money for our business building. We do need to replace Johnson Hall, the women's dormitory in particular. It's old. We do need to replace Mahan Hall. We need a place in which to teach art, but we may come up with some solution to that problem before too long. We need a place in which to teach drama other than what we have now, which are really rented facilities off campus. But in time, we'll get these things that we need. It's taken us a while to get what we have. But the most of the buildings on the campus now are comparatively new.
Do you have adequate acreage here to expand?
Well, we can get one or two more buildings on the campus just the way it is. Now, we buy as we can reasonably, we hope. We buy as we can property adjacent to the campus. The lots on which Archer Hall on Main Street for girls and Asher Hall on Main Street for girls, those lots were purchased as they became available several years ago. And we bought last summer the Ellison property on Main Street, which is large enough for our building, and we just buy space as we can for our new building. And we have enough space, say, for two right now, maybe three, without crowding a great deal. But we're still buying property as we can.
Well, now, you mentioned that there's a history to this Gatliff building that we're in. Why don't you just go ahead and give that name?
Well, let me go back a little to the Gatliff family. The story of Cumberland Cottage could not be told without mentioning people, some of whose names I may not recall right off, but I mentioned the Gatliffs and the Silers and the Ellisons and the Mahan, and there are others. But the Gatliff family has played a very important role in the history of Cumberland Cottage. Dr. A. Gatliff, for whom this building was named, I suppose might really be truly styled as the person most influential in the founding of the college. And his family has been intimately connected with the school ever since its founding. He was chairman of the board for many years. Then he was succeeded as chairman of the board by a man by the name of T.D. Mahan. And then he was in turn succeeded by Dr. Gatliff's son, Mr. J.B. Gatliff Sr. And he served a long time as chairman of the board. I don't remember how many years, perhaps 30 years. And his son, J.B. Gatliff Jr., also served as chairman. But the money for this building came from just a number of small gifts, except for what the Gatliff sisters contributed. These Gatliff sisters are really all married, and but they together gave $50,000 toward this building, and they are the ones who really gave the impetus necessary to get the money needed for its construction. And so the building was appropriately named the Dr. A. Gatliff Memorial Building. It houses a chapel in addition to classrooms and administrative offices.
You mentioned chapel. Now, is chapel a required thing?
Yes, chapel is still required at Cumberland Cottage. There are some, perhaps on the staff, who would do away with it, but the board supports me in saying that we should have required chapel. So each student is required to attend chapel once a week.
Well, now, who have been some of the outstanding graduates of Cumberland?
Well, that, of course, puts me on the spot because there are a number of them, and without seeing a list of alumni, I couldn't begin to name all of them who have been somewhat prominent. I think of several, though. One of the people who has made a great contribution to the medical profession is Dr. Ralph Denham, a heart specialist in Louisville. He was graduated from a two-year program, and I believe he graduated from the University of Kentucky. Took his degree in medicine, as I recall, at the University of Louisville, and specialized in heart study, and he's recognized certainly throughout 200 or 300 mile radius as an outstanding person in the medical field, particularly in heart problems. Then I think of some who have been somewhat outstanding in military service who are graduates of Cumberland. One of them is John Baker, and another is his brother, Ben Baker, who is a brigadier general, or maybe higher than that now, in the medical corps, in the Army. John Baker was in the attorney general's range. He specialized in law and made quite a contribution in that particular way. Dr. William A. McCall, one of the early graduates of Furman College, now I suppose 90 years of age or maybe older, came from down near Jellicoe, had nothing at all, and got his start at Cumberland College. He went on from here. I think he attended LMU, which then had maybe a higher level program on the college, in the college area than Cumberland. Then went to Columbia University and later became a professor there, wrote several books. Was served for a while in China, and I believe he taught for a short time at the University of Miami in Florida before he fully retired. And he is regarded as, was regarded as an outstanding authority in certain areas in education. Now those are the ones that come to my mind right off. I think one or two more. Howard Boozer, who was graduated here in the early 40s, is executive director of the public higher education program of North Carolina. Well, those are the ones. Nobody else's name comes to me right this moment.
Okay. What has been the relationship of this college to Williamsburg and the surrounding area?
The college support, the support from the college in its early days came to a great extent from local sources. Now the money was raised in New York and other places, but the local people gave all their money and many times sacrificially to help create the college and to keep it going. And therefore, the local people have, in general, felt a very close tie with the college, which is part of it. Kids went to school here. Support to make it go in the first place came from this town. And I might mention too that there are people here in Williamsburg right now who started the school in the first grade at Cumberland College, went through high school, went through college, and they either settled down here in Williamsburg or went on to professional school. And then came back. Hugh Steele, for example, is one of those who is president of Bank of Williamsburg. And there are others who did the same thing.
Well, now today, do you have a lot of students from here in Whitley County, or do you get a lot of students from outside?
Well, as we get, we have a heavy enrollment from Whitley County. The enrollment from Whitley County. You're asking about the Whitley County enrollment. Whitley County, the enrollment of Whitley County has reached at one time, maybe more than one time, over 400. And I would guess that this fall we all probably have in the neighborhood of 300. And then we'll have some new ones coming the second semester, so the total enrollment, and in the summer some other new. Even this year that we're going into right now, we may have 350 to 400 students in Whitley County. We draw very heavily from the area in which we are. Bell County, we'll have probably 100 students from Bell, around that number. We may have 100 from Harlan, and until the Southeast Center, junior college sponsored by the University of Kentucky, was put up there. We had well over 100 students from the Harlan County. We draw well from Clay County, maybe 40, 50, 60 students. We draw well from McCrary. I don't know whether I mentioned that. But basically, our enrollment comes from the area right here where we are. Campbell County, Tennessee, supplied us a good many students, too.
Well, now, what about financially? Does the impact of students coming in here help the county?
Financial impact of the college is greater than, I believe it can be safely said, is greater than that of any of the factories in the Williamsburg sector of Whitman County. I say that certainly without offense, because these factories which are here play a role in the financial situation of Cumberland College. Many kids whose parents work at these factories attend Cumberland College, and many times the students themselves do work there. But the college has a budget now of around $5 million or more, and it's impossible to circulate that much money without it having a great impact. And then the students who attend the college spend money every day here in Williamsburg and around Williamsburg, and this has a terrific impact on the economy. And then parents come to visit them. We bring people in here for a sports contest, and this brings in money. And the college is really a big factor in the economy, particularly in the Williamsburg sector of Whitman County.
Now, this may be a hard question for you to answer, or maybe you'll be a little biased about it, but what do you think the reputation of Cumberland College is?
I think Cumberland College has a good reputation. The reputation of Cumberland College is based, as that of all colleges, on what its graduates become. How do they succeed in medical school, dental school, and law school? How do they do in their professions? And I believe Cumberland stands up well by comparison with other four-year colleges in our state.
Now, is there any underlying philosophy of the college?
Yes, Cumberland College has its stated aim, the Institute of Real Estate's stated aim, to make it possible for mountain students to get the higher education. This is one of its fundamental aims. And it's, of course, around this is centered its philosophy and practice. And then to the providing, the other aim is not secondary, but corresponding to, is to provide an education in a Christian atmosphere where there is a spiritual impact on the lives of many of its students, and perhaps on the lives of all of them. Now, Cumberland, for example, I can cite this to show how Cumberland College was a religious program, how effective it is. The Kentucky Baptists have what is known, Kentucky Baptist Convention, as what is known as a summer missions program. Under this program, with a little support from the denomination, but to some extent from what the students raise themselves, the missionaries, summer missionaries, go to various parts of the country, and some once in a while to a foreign country, to teach the principles that Jesus Christ laid down, and even to evangelize. Now, they're from all of the colleges in Kentucky this summer. There were 117 of these Baptist missionary students who went out. But of that 117, 37 of them came from one institution, Cumberland College. That is around 30% of them. And there are, keep in mind, there 33 colleges in the state of Kentucky. Well, but one-third of those student missionaries came from Cumberland College. And this is an example of the religious impact that Cumberland has on the students.
Well, now, one final thing I want to ask you. We have discussed building plans and things. Are there any other future plans that you have here for Cumberland? Anything specific you can think of?
Well, in the way of buildings or...
Or just other than buildings.
Well...
We have discussed that.
We are continually looking ahead to see what we can do and to make our work more pertinent to society as it exists today and more pertinent to the area in which we are. Our faculty retreat this time, which will be held around the 25th, 6th, or 7th of August, will emphasize the opportunities for educational development of Cumberland College in relation to the development of the community. That is, we'll see, study what the community is doing, what effect the mining of coal has on the community, what effect the restaurants and motels and so on have on the community as a consequence of tourism and so on. And then we will raise questions, how can Cumberland College relate itself to what is developing in the community, in industry, and in other ways.
Well, now, Dr. Boswell, is there anything else that you would like to add about Cumberland that I've not asked you about?
Well, there are many things I could add, but I would like to mention this, that over of the more than 1,600 regularly enrolled students on a campus, over 300 of those students require total aid. And the total aid package is usually made up of a loan, scholarship, and a worksheet. But in addition to providing money or loans, scholarships, and worksheets, Cumberland, for many of these students, must provide money for eyeglasses, dental bills, medical bills, everyday incidentals, sometimes money to travel back and forth to and from their home. And the total aid, the total aid at Cumberland College awards, and some of this is federal aid, a good part of it, is, I guess, will approach nearly $3 million in the year in which we're going into right now. I might mention hurriedly the nurse training program, which was developed to help meet the needs of the community. And it is rendering great service to the area. Many of the nurses in the hospitals in the neighboring towns are now people who have attended our nursing program. And Cumberland is trying to continue to relate itself to the community, meet the needs of the community, at the same time to turn out graduates who can keep pace or be competitive with the graduates of other institutions. And I would emphasize again that we try to provide this education in a Christian atmosphere and in a Christian context.
Well, Dr. Boswell, I want to thank you for taking this time out to talk with me. I know you're very busy, and I really appreciate it, but I was told that you were Mr. Cumberland College, and if I missed you, it'd be a mistake. So thank you very much.
No, thank you. I'm sorry I have that in you because I really am not. But there are a lot of people who have made Cumberland College what it is. And I wish I had had time to tell you about some of the outstanding teachers who are now gone, who on whose shoulders rested the responsibility for developing and keeping maintaining a strong academic program in 1919 or 20, or even earlier than that, up through 1950.
Thank you very much.